I'm just gonna let that ride for a second. I gotta stop right now because I could play that all day long. Good morning, good morning. The on-air light is on and it is Friday, so you know that means it is time for another episode of Jibology. Right off the bat, let me go ahead and tell you, formerly Jibology 101, we decided to streamline a little bit, break it down to Jibology. Changed the logo, so at the time you're hearing this, actually, that shouldn't be at the fucking time. It's already posted. Brand new Jibology logo, nothing crazy, just made a few tweaks here and there. But for the three shows that I'm going to be offering on a proper Rumpus Media Network, just figured it's easier to have three good solid logos, so then when we get to the merch stage, it'll be a little bit easier and better to deal with. Plus, I mean, the logo that I had up before was really killing me. It was like a picture of a picture of a picture, and that doesn't sit well. But anyways, now that we're through all that, thank you guys for coming and sitting in. Right off the bat, the last episode, once again, need to thank Don DiGiorgio, my guy. Like I said in the intro, what you guys got to see was just a conversation between me and another podcaster who's a part of the network that I'm affiliated with that I had never met before, and he and I just kind of had a really good back and forth, and I think it played out really well. Also, at the time that you were hearing this, I don't really go too crazy over making any lists or anything else as far as viewership or people listening to the show, but at the time you were hearing this for the very first time ever, it doesn't really matter where the place is, but I am happy to at least report that Jabbo and the Teeb, as well as this show Jibology, are both on Good Pod's top 100 comedy list and top 100 indie comedy list. So you guys are listening, man, and you guys are rating the show, and thank you very much, and we're still available everywhere that you listen to podcasts. We're completely everywhere. So as I continue with Jibology, formerly Jibology 101, as I still put down Jabbo and the Teeb, and as I move on now to do some things with Scene in 15, as I continue to build this dream of putting together a media network, thank you guys very much for your continued support. So right off the rip, I did not know. I was like, man, there's so much shit going on, but I don't know what I'm going to do a show on. I have no idea what I can talk about for the fuck I don't. Oh, my Lord, the fuck I don't. There's so much stuff going on. So the biggest thing for me right now is going to be trying to pace myself to get all this shit out in one order. Like I tell everybody, I completely believe that I have some form of a attention deficit or hyperactivity disorder, something like that. So I can be holding my shit together to explain some of this to you and go over these stories. It's like trying to flex a muscle and hold it. So if I jump and I scatter and I get all over the place, please bear with me. You've listened to me this far, so hopefully we'll keep it going from here. So, as you know, just to round off the three shows for Proper Rumpus Media, we have finally set a date, or not a date, we finally set a day for the release of Scene in 15. So, Wednesday will be Jabbo and the Teeb, Thursday will be Scene in 15, and Friday is when you will get to have your Jibology. So, like I say, we're rocking the shit out of the back half of the week, and you know, you guys have supported the other two shows, Scene in 15. It's something a little bit different. It's a project that I've wanted to work on for a while. We've got a little extra stuff to it. We've explained it and everything else. But those episodes should be coming out very, very soon. Also, Wednesday, there was no Jabbo in the Teeb. It was Van's birthday. He had some things that were going together to get up, get out, and to be able to take some trips and do some special things for his birthday. And the time for us to be able to sit down and record really wasn't there. I've got this new thing where I'm really, really adamant about not missing recording dates. I hate fucking missing them. But I do realize that every once in a while, you know, I take it as a learning push. Maybe things we could have done differently. Maybe sometimes I need to learn that, you know, you don't always get to put out what you want to put out when you want to put it out. And I'm working against that. But I was a little bit bummed about not being able to make that yesterday. So initially, I was going to go ahead and do guest host with Nashawn. And I figured, hey, you know, this will be a good time to break in, to kind of spiel the crap out of Scene in 15. But I think we kind of broke into that with other shows. We've done it here. I've only talked to a couple other podcasters about it. But I didn't want to make everything with a guest host episode about another thing that I'm doing. I mean, it's my show. I can do whatever the hell I want. But I sound like such a narcissistic prick. I'm really not that bad. But I want to be able to have each one of the shows stand alone on their own merit. As you know, with this show, when I first started this one, I would post and jab on the Teeb space. Because I still hadn't worked out all the craziness with everything to be able to keep the show on Anchor. But I don't, like, now that I know a little bit more, 2 years into the podcasting game and everything else, there's a couple of moves that we're thinking about making. But I need Scene in 15 to be its own standalone thing, and it will. Like, there'll be a bleed over here and there, but I didn't want to eat up an entire hour of Jab on the T with talking about Scene in 15. I can do that shit here. Or we can just go ahead and launch the flipping show, to be completely honest. But like I said, figured I would go ahead and as opposed to throwing together something last minute. And, you know, as you know, we're going through the whole pregnancy kick right now. Like, we're at the verge of popping any day now. Matter of fact, we have an appointment today. But yeah. I did want to force it. Plus, like I said, there's a lot of shit going on. So what I was able to try to pull off, and I'm going to go, like I said, with this show, I'm transparent. So you're going to hear about the shit that I try to do that I don't pull off. What I'm going to attempt to do is a special episode of Jab on the Tee that will drop probably fucking Saturday, to be honest. I generated some, as you've seen on Twitter, me and my buddy, my brother from another mother, Igo Nuts, he read into some of my tweets and tore my shit apart about how I don't know anything about wrestling and how I was just so happy. And I haven't seen him in a while, so he and I normally sit down and cut up pretty good. So one thing that I figured we could actually pull off trying to do would be to sit and do a wrestling episode. Because, I mean, it'll be a good back and forth. Plus, there is nothing that he knows Van personally. So there's nothing in the world that would make him happier than to sit in on me and Van's show and completely take the fuck over. It's all in good fun. But I think it would be absolutely cool to do that with him. He's one of my favorite fucking people to talk to with this show. My episode of this show that we did was very well received. A lot of people dug it. So if you want to hear me and Igo cut the fuck up on Jab on the Tee, where I know, I'm telling you right now, he's going to be tons of shit that he talks about Van. It's just his way. So you can tune into that. Hopefully, if we can pull it off tomorrow. If this drops, I do apologize. But like I said, I'm going to be as transparent as humanly possible. Speaking of which, I had told you a couple episodes ago about, you know, the life of a podcaster, shit that you bank on, things that you work on, and I don't know whether or not I'd gone too deep into one of the other shows that I was considering doing. Excuse me. A brainchild of an old army buddy of mine, he and I put together. Originally thought it was getting hardcore backburner, then figured it was fading away. It's not. I've been in contact with this cat. The content that we've recorded has not been lost. So there's still a glimmering hope that you will get to hear Salsa con Collard Greens. There's still a good shot, and that is video. We're going to figure more of that stuff out, but like I said, it was one of those projects that I told you dropped on the floor. There may be some redemption there, so don't completely write that off just yet. All right, so why did I open with Guns Go Bang by Kid Cudi and Jay-Z? I have been fucking feeling myself lately. I've completely been feeling myself lately. And I joke with the old lady with Nashawn. I was like, I didn't respect so much more of my blackness until I started messing with your white ass. Like, I joke with her about it. It's one of those things that we talk about. But recently, and I'm going to go with probably the most recent thing, and I'm going to track it back. Recently, I have revisited, and like I said, I'm fucking stepping on my dick here, but for any odd reason, if anybody, don't give him shit about this, please, for the love of God, don't, because he's been extremely cool and gracious to me, and like I said, I hope I can pull this off, and it'll be a complete dream come true for me. But most recently, I had revisited the idea of doing an episode of Jabology with Chio Hadari Coker. And for those of you that may or may not have followed that, he is the writer of several episodes of Southside with Regina King. And he wrote Notorious, and he co-wrote Creed 2. And he is the creator, the showrunner, and wrote several episodes of Luke Cage. And at the time, I want to say it was through another friend of ours. Because isn't that kind of fucking cool? I'm inside of 6 degrees of separation from the guy that wrote Notorious. One of the last people to talk to Biggie, or last people to give an interview, to get an interview from Biggie before he passed. It's pretty damn amazing. But I have probably given the short backstory on Chio Coker and myself, but I might as well go into it now. This episode is not going to be like a 9,000 year celebration of black artistry, but it kind of is. So if one of the things about this is I told you that I would tell you about my influences and where I was creatively and the things that drive me. And right now, this is one of the biggest things that's sitting on my chest. So walk with me, if you will. I posted a picture of my closet. I'm a complete nerd. I'm a blurred all day long. Proper Rumpus Studios is actually, it's a quote unquote a man cave, but I don't strictly hold it to myself. I want everybody in my family to enjoy it. I mean, the walls are plastered with shit that I love and things that I enjoy, and it's a really good creative space for me. And it's really cool because I do think that creating a good creative space, something that's warm like this, is very therapeutic. Plus, I get to sit here and do my show in this space. So it's a very good thing for me. It's really, it's really weird, like the mind state that sitting down and putting this show together in this environment is. But anyways, I digress. So being a black nerd, of course, one of the things, I have toys fucking everywhere. Like, I have toys in glass cases, I have toys in boxes, I have toys in other parts of this house that I will never fucking see. I have like a whole grip of toys that are underneath the stairs in a space that was cut out for the dog, that are like boxes of Marvel Legends that my girlfriend refuses to let me get rid of, because but they're all sitting there. And in true black nerd fashion, I just have tons upon tons upon tons of different shit, toys and comic books and masks and movies and everything else. So my closet upstairs, it's transitioned from being just like a place where I kept a shit ton of my toys and collectibles to, if you follow Instagram, and if you really follow Twitter, and if I've talked to you, you know that I also make resin toys. I do resin art and custom action figures and geek shit like that. So I was transitioning and cleaning one of my storage closets out that had tons of comic books and toys and stuff like that in it. And in there, a long time ago at GameStop, I had managed to get my hands on like a Luke Cage PVC figure, collector's edition figure, and I loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. I watched the first season of Luke Cage, and although it was not perfect, it was so it was so me. It was so, like, I hate to, like, I wish that I could find a better term, and maybe stumbling through this as I talk about it, I'll run into it. But it was so beautifully black, I couldn't do anything but love it. And I'll go into some of that here too. But I really, really love the show. Like I said, it wasn't perfect, but it's one of those situations where you don't have to look like me to appreciate it. But if you look like me, it means a lot more to you. So of course I had this figure, and you know, I was trying to get, you know, move around a little bit more in social media at the time, because one of the things that I don't know if you know about this fucking life is you have got to be social media aware. You've got to be social media present. Like, if the whole point is for your product to make it to as many people as possible, like, you have to be able to do the same shit on the mic that you can do through social media. So the days that you don't feel like doing this, you still got to do it. The days that you don't feel like marketing your stupid ass ideas and your voice or how great they are, you still have to do it. So do I really think anybody out there gave anything that resembled a fuck about my closet? Absolutely not. But, you know, it's me making a social media presence based off of the fact that I needed to be present because people listen to Jabba and the Teeb. Plus, half the motherfuckers that listen to that show anyways are the type of people that, yeah, you're cool enough to get laid, but you also have your own fucking closet of toys. So let's not alienate a nigga over here. But so I take a picture of the inside of the closet and I post it, and I put something to the effect of, you know, hey, I got this dirty ass closet, I'm about to clean it. Does anybody else out there think I need help? And there is a buddy of mine, I'm going to shout him the fuck out. He actually is the godfather to my niece, Brandel. What's going on, bruh? I'm going to make it up there, man. Shout out to 1854 Cycling Company, company out of Framingham, Massachusetts, I believe. If I butcher any of that, I'll go through my phone while I'm doing this and make sure I lock him down, because he's a good brother. The things that he does are quite amazing, and he should get some shine. Plus, I'm pretty sure he's the reason why this next move was able to happen. But so I believe I somehow attached Brandel to it, and you know, because he and I have these kind of showdowns. They're not really showdowns. He and I joke back and forth about memorabilia that we pick up, and mostly it's in the form of Funko Pops. So we'll post pictures back and forth and everything else. And it's normally this ongoing, this running joke that we have over, you know, certain Pop Funkos that we get. So I don't know. I'm pretty sure, without asking, was he a fan of the show, the show Luke Cage? I'm pretty sure Brandel was a fan of the show. So somewhere in the scheme of things, I want to say that in some way he was attached to it, but I shot it up, and I think that either he interacts with Chio or something to that effect, but Chio was in there and he saw it. I don't believe that I tagged him in it, because I wouldn't have known in a million years to do so. But because of that, Chio Coker sees it and he shoots me a tweet, and he was like, yeah, you know, if you send me that Luke Cage, I'll go ahead and I'll sign it. So I'm fucking floored. Right off the bat, I'm fucking floored. So shout out to, and now that I've actually stopped being lazy and looked it the fuck up, the 1854 Cycling Company is a premium bicycle brand founded to create living wage jobs for the formerly incarcerated. So you can find them at www.1854cycling.com. That's 1854cycling.com. And they are out of Framingham, Massachusetts. So go ahead and give them a shout, man. They do good stuff. But so Chio sends me this message that he wants me to send him the Luke Cage, and he wants to sign it. So I'm all over the place. I'm like, oh my God, I know who this dude is. It's like I've seen his name on the cover of you know, Vibe and The Source and all this kind of shit. And if you're a hip hop guy, I mean, if you're a real hip hop guy, and by hip hop, I mean, I still will tell you, I think I grew up during the greatest era of hip hop. I don't think hip hop will ever be as groundbreaking. And this is me being fucking really, really short-sighted, but I don't think hip hop during my lifetime, shall I say, will be as groundbreaking and influential and as much as a force as it was during the time period that I'm talking about. But when you're Biggie's and your Nas's, and Def Jam was the most crazy big label in the world, and you know, people actually tuned in for the Bad Boy Def Row bullshit ass beef and Biggie and Tupac and all that, I think that was probably one of the best eras of hip hop. But this is, you know, Chio was writing in the trenches during this time. So, you know, the wealth of people that he ran into musically while writing for Vibe and everything else, like, shit. Vibe, if you don't know, was a magazine that was started by Quincy Jones. And Quincy Jones, in my opinion, strictly my opinion, if not the greatest music producer of all time, he's on a really fucking short list of producers that I think are the most influential or the greatest of all time. And that's saying a lot, because I'm a huge music guy. But Chio was in the trenches writing articles during this time period. So the wealth of talent that he was able to pull out for the first season of Luke Cage is another one of those things that made me a huge fan. So here's the guy that's connected to one of the biggest things in the world that drives me, music, during the most crazily beautiful period of music for a certain genre that I could attach myself to, and this guy wants me to send him my fucking toy so he can sign it. I'm over the moon, and I'm like, I'm telling everybody, oh yeah, well, Chio Coker got in touch with me, like, yeah, it's my guy now. Me and that nigga on a first name basis, like all sorts of just crazy shit. But I was really, really floored by it. So you know, we had a back and forth through DMs, and then I threw you know, a note and some stuff in the box and shot it out to him. And he, oh, God bless him, Chio. I don't even know if you'll listen to this, but if he does, if you do, nothing but admiration. Seriously, nothing but admiration. He not only signed two or three sides of this, because I told him, I was like, you know, I'm not going to sell this shit, man. This is a piece of badassness for me. So he signed like three sides of this box, made me a video for authenticity, which he sent to me, and then sent the box out. And far be it for me to be that guy to be like, oh man, now I get to ask you for a fucking interview. I shit in one hand, wish in the other, see which one fills up first. And at the time, this was long enough ago that I didn't know my elbow from my asshole. Like, if you ask me, right now, the fact that I'm able to do what I do by way of podcasting, part of this shit is dumb luck. A lot of it is repetition, muscle memory, and everything else. And I'd love to tell you that every time I sit down, I knock it out the park. Or every time I sit down, I know exactly what I'm going to say. Or that it doesn't take fucking, you know, me taking a breath or me taking a shot of liquor or something or me being in a better frame to get my shit together to be able to do this. But, you know, It was just one of those things where I was like, if he tells me he wants to do an episode of the show with me, I'm not going to fucking say no. This is before Jabology existed. And I only had Jabbo and the Teeb. So it was trying to find how to pull this off, then how to coordinate perfectly with Van to catch this one once in a lifetime fucking interview and to have it work. So, you know, this was during like the thick of COVID. So the age of Zoom and all that crap, like it was stuff that, you know, I was familiar with. But I think at the time, and hopefully I catch this. Hopefully I catch this. I believe in positivity. So I'm going to try to speak this one into existence because I think it'll be a really, really big thing for me. But at the time, I don't think I was ready to get it. You know, there were things that I had dropped by way of technology, and I was still wet behind the ears. And, you know, I'd read a couple of interviews that people had done with Chio, and he does make the statement that, dude, if you have a chance to do something, if you really have a chance to do something, do it well, because no matter what, the next guy that looks like me, somebody might not take a chance on because of me half-assing it. So maybe it was designed for me not to be able to do that with him the first time out, because maybe now I'm better equipped to do so and do a better job. But for whatever reason, he reached out and said he wanted to do the show. And like I said, there were 40 billion things that I had to line up. And, you know, closed mouths don't get fed, man. I didn't jump on it. I didn't chase it. You know, at the time he was open to do the show and we were discussing stuff, I was full of fucking excuses. They were legit reasons, but I kind of felt like if somebody's giving you a shot at $1 million, you know, you do whatever the fuck it takes to get that million, if that's really what you want. So for me to get a shot to be able to talk to somebody that is a hero of mine, that I didn't even realize how big of a hero this man was to me until I actually sat down and thought about it, to miss that fucking shot because I wasn't ready, it's something that I told myself I would never do again. So that's actually, oddly enough, that is actually one of the reasons why Jabology existed, why Jabology has been created, because it was something that I could do outside of Jab on the Tee, outside of Van, that I could do on my own. Not saying that what I did with Van wasn't important and that it still isn't. I love doing that show, don't get me wrong, but there's still more that I wanted to say, and there's still more that I wanted to do, and still more that I wanted to focus on. And trying to eat up an hour, 2-3 hours, whatever, a Jab on the Tee I mean, not saying the Jab on the Tee isn't real, but real, more down-to-earth shit wasn't something that I could pull off. The show would be like 4 fucking hours. And who's really going to do 4 hours and half of it is just me acting like a complete me, and the other half is me acting like a complete, much more chilled, laid-back, open me? That's too much. So, oddly enough, that's one of the things. I was like, well, if I do catch the Chio interview, it'll be Jab on the Tee without fucking Tee, because I figured the random oddness of when that call came across the table was not going to lend itself to, oh, we're all just going to be in the perfect place at the perfect time to do this perfect show. I did not think that was going to happen. So I was rolling around with the, oh, here we go. We'll see how this works. You know, maybe I'll be here to catch it regardless, but maybe we can catch Van for it too, so it can be a Jab on the Tee thing. And I felt bad originally for having to pull away from that, but I was like, you know what, man? If I catch it, I catch it. Fuck it. He'll understand. And Van was great. Van didn't give a shit. He's like, yeah, dude, knock it the fuck out the park. And like I said, it still hasn't happened yet, and it's still floating in the water. The update was, it was just mentioned the other day, you know, shoot my shot, and, you know, I shot a text message to Chio, and he's still on board to do the interview. And he said when he's not writing that he'd sit down and he'd do it. So once again, even if it doesn't materialize, which I do believe it will, because we're going to push that into positivity, I think it'll be a big kick for me. Now I look at being able to catch this interview, or being able to just sit down and talk to Chio, that this is a go see Dave Chappelle moment for me. And this one I have to explain to you. I love and respected Dave, and I still do, because of the trials and tribulations that he's going through, the honest conversations that he's having, dead in the middle of controversy. And like I said, if you don't at least understand where Dave is coming from, and on some parts of it, if you don't agree, then I believe that there's things that you're not listening to. But that's strictly my opinion. But going to see him was a big thing for me, because I've always fashioned myself to say a lot of shit that people don't. It's not exactly the most popular opinion in the world to have, but somehow, I guess the way that it gets delivered is a little bit easier on the ears. And I'm not comparing myself to Dave or anybody else, and I'm not great or none of that shit, but I don't know. There's a very huge drawing and kindred spirit I felt, so that was a big moment for me. Being able to sit down and talk to Chio Coker is probably bigger than that, and here's the reason why. For the longest time, I, just like several other people of color, you were so enamored in being society's version of what black is supposed to be. You're supposed to listen to hip-hop. During my era, it is, you're supposed to have the baggy jeans and the fucking starter jackets, and you're supposed to say nigga and slang and everything else, and you're not supposed to talk proper. There's this huge subculture of the black nerd, and there always has been. You know, the black kid that did the skateboarding thing, and the black kid that could read, you know, a shit ton of comic books, and, you know, played with toys on a level that was a little bit deeper than, you know, just entertainment. You know, the kid that knows the entire mythology of the fucking Transformers, just things like that. But for the longest time, you weren't, that was not portrayed. It wasn't portrayed. It wasn't accepted in society. You were warm. You were weird. You were different. And as far as I know, when you saw the white kids that were, you know, kind of in the comic books, and it's like, oh, you know, there was a call, oh, okay, well, you're just a geek, or you're just in the comic books, you're a comic book geek, or you're a comic book nerd, that's fine. But for some reason, when you saw a black kid do it, it was like seeing a fucking giraffe with two heads. And I don't know why that was the case. Maybe it's, you know, the spots where I grew up, which is weird because being a military kid, I was a world traveler, but the seed of the black nerd had been planted a long fucking time ago. And not having that representation at, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, and not truly getting that representation until you're fucking 40, you don't realize how big of an impact that is to see yourself represented in pop culture and culture period. So this is where Chadwick Boseman comes in as a hero. This is where Chio Coker comes in as a hero. And in that black nerd universe, you know, all the people of color that have participated, and I've been running through them lately, and all of your superhero shows, whether it's Meteor Man or Spawn, Michael J. White, shout out to him. Just, there's always been something about seeing yourself represented on the big screen, or seeing yourself represented period on a medium that is worldwide, that is big, that's in front of everyone's face. So with Chadwick Boseman, and oh god, Nashawn hates it when I talk about this. I know that she wants to punch me in the face sometimes when I do that. The day that her biological father passed was also the same day that Chadwick Boseman died. I was not trying in any way, shape, or form to be insensitive. I swear I was not. But, like, I wept for this man that I never met. I had met her father on one occasion, and I spoke to him, and he was a very kind man to sit down and talk to. But here I was, on the day that her dad died, like, holding back tears for Chadwick Boseman. And it's crazy, because I met her dad, and I never met Chadwick Boseman. And it's hard as hell to try to explain to somebody that, because you seem like the world's biggest uncaring and sensitive prick. But the day that Chadwick Boseman died for me, it was kind of like, I don't want to say it was the day the music died, but it was almost like the day the music died. He gave us Black Panther. he gave us royalty on the screen. Growing up as a kid, I've said it before, I think the greatest, probably the greatest basic, raw, well-written, you know, blue-collar, solid American fucking screen hero. I love Indiana Jones. I love Harrison Ford. I love Indiana Jones. I think that character is just so well-written. I think that's the period that it works in. If you ask me, Han Solo ain't nothing but Indiana Jones in fucking space with a little bit more shit to him. But Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford, that character, like, to me, that is, like, Indy is the shit. Indy is completely the shit. So that was who I grew up with as a on-screen badass hero. You know, you had your Luke Skywalkers and everything else, and there was nothing wrong with any of these guys. I still fuck with Mark Hamill and everything else, but I never got to see somebody that looked like me on a screen that didn't have some sort of period connotation to it. And what I mean by that is, when you watch TV in the 50s, you see how black people were portrayed in the 50s. When you watch TV in the 60s, you see how black people were portrayed in the 60s. It's not just us. It's pretty much every minority, and, you know, ultimately everybody. But times, they are a changing. So by the time Chadwick Boseman had came along and played James Brown and played Jackie Robinson and everything else, and when he finally came along and you see him as a prince, eventually King T'Challa, and I believe the first time he showed up was what, Civil War? Captain America Civil War. And when you get to see him come alive as a character, one of the most badass characters in the Marvel Universe that they had kind of wanted to do, but they couldn't knock out of the park. And you'd had Blade with Wesley Snipes and things before. It wasn't the first time you'd had a Marvel character of color come to the big screen and to have it roll over. But not only was he King, Prince, then King T'Challa, like, he was this badass character. And the crazy thing is, I went back and I looked at it, and after watching, if you go back and you watch Winter Soldier, and then you make it to Captain America Civil War, Winter Soldier whoops everyone's ass first time out. The first person he completely doesn't fuck with when they first engage is Black Panther. Plus Chadwick Boseman, he was easy on the eyes. He was a fantastic guy to follow. He was cool as shit. And then when you find out at the end of his life that he had cancer the entire time when he pulled off some of these roles, it makes you even more respect the art and the things that he put through, because these things were important to him. It's almost like you feel like you continue to sacrifice your body and your well-being because you wanted to make sure that I saw what I needed to see. You made sure that I got to see, portrayed in a fantastically beautiful and positive light, a black superhero dead in front of me. I've got something now for generations to build off of. And I'd like to believe, and I do believe, that I don't think it had shit to do with a paycheck, man. I think it was, he was willing to sacrifice his body for this because it was important for us to see it. I think it was important for it to get made, and it was important for us to see it. And with him, and I have to explain this to people too, the legitimacy of how big and beautiful Black Panther was. It's not the fact that we just got a black superhero. I need to explain this because this is my take. We don't have culture. Black people, we do not have culture that extends itself past America. We don't. We don't have any form of, oh, my grandparents came from this country and my great-great-grandparents came from this country and they were here and they migrated from here. For most of us, and I don't think it's realized, like, if we're lucky enough to trace back to the first, second generations of slavery, that within itself is a feat of mysticism. But you're talking about pushing us all the way back to the fucking motherland. We have no culture. Our culture is American culture. Which is why, if you listen to the episode of Jabology with my dad talks about how America is his country and black history is American history and it should never be thought of as not being such. So that's the thing. It is. It completely is. So the beginnings of whatever culture we have is right here in America. So when Black Panther painted this fictional country, this fictional continent of Wakanda, and we find out that it's been mined for years and hidden from the world, and it is this beautiful, technologically advanced, like just oasis of greatness, and you know, we know that it's not real, but it's kind of like you get to see heaven, and it was created so beautifully and everything else. And you know, the only thing that I really hear that people complain about in that movie is like, oh well, some of the CGI was off at the end. Like, but that's why that movie meant so much to us. You had a principal black cast doing a fantastic job of telling a great story. And, you know, I still think it's one of the heavy-hitting Marvel movies. It's still in my top five as far as everything they've released on the big screen anyway. But it was such an achievement for us that we got to see our Superman. You know, Black Panther was essentially our Superman. We got to see that. So now, with that being a chunk and building block at the time that, you know, I decided, you know, you're going to be a content creator. You're going to be an artist. No matter how you look at it, that's what you are. You know, whether you... coffee. Whether you sit down and discuss how to bring out a better show, or you write skits, or, you know, you're drawing something, or you're creating art, you have the heart of an artist, and there's something about it that I keep telling people. There's something about being passionate enough to create something, like even with this world of podcasting, there's something that's crazy about fiending and feeling this need to create something. And you know, you run into kindred spirits that do it with you too, so that's pretty amazing. But then there's something different about, you know, the influences and things being people that look like you because they've done such a fantastic fucking job of what they do. So this is where we bled into Chio. And I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've had this conversation in my head 1,000 fucking times. I have interviewed and sat down with the entire cast of the first season of Luke Cage in my head, just because I realized what an influence Chio's work has been on me as a black nerd. You know, when I was told I couldn't pick up a comic book, or that it was white of me to pick up a comic book, or that it was white of me to be able to enunciate so well, or be able to talk and all this other kind of shit. Here I have in front of me complete proof that that's bullshit, man. You know, Black Panther domestically smashed fucking records. At the time it came out, I think it held on pretty strong as the number one biggest Marvel movie domestically. It killed. It sat at $700 million for a minute, and it destroyed records. And I felt, you know, I was a part of that. And I always joke with people. I'm like, yep, that's the one movie niggas ain't bootleg. It's like, we might have fucked around and bootleg Notorious, nigga, or, you know, something else. But we ain't bootleg motherfucking. You almost felt bad for bootlegging Black Panther. Don't get me wrong. There's some niggas that did. I ran into some niggas in barbershops. They were like, hey, let me get that cut up right, dog. Man, let me get you faded up, nigga. I'm like, dude, I'm a 42-year-old bald guy. There's nothing left up here to fucking fade. Man, let me say this motherfucking 20 sack. I got a copy of this motherfucking Black Panther too, nigga. I'm like, man, you should be ashamed of yourself. Yeah, I'll take the weed. You can keep Black Panther. That's blasphemous, nigga. It's blasphemous. No, but so it was a huge achievement, and it made us feel prouder for everything else. So you know, Chiyo being a part of the mythology, you were one of the only show creators of color at Marvel, and he did an amazing job. Luke Cage, and I went back and I read this in another article in an interview that he did, and I posted it on Twitter. I can't kick it off right now, but it was a fantastic article. It actually brought tears to my eyes, man. There's just something so crazy about not realizing how big an influence somebody has on you, and then you actually being able to have a beeline to talk to that person. They're like, dude, do you realize how much of my life you fucking have influenced? Like, you've talked to my favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Like, you've written some movies that for me have touched on cultural points, and you know, you've assembled a writing room that was able to kind of talk about my cares and concerns as a black man. And the thing is, you didn't make it solely like, oh, these are just black people problems. No, you had an honest and open conversation with people about life, and you were responsible when you did it, because you know, you had that platform to be able to do that. And like I said, I believe that interview is going to happen. I could yammer on and on and on about it, but hopefully we pull that off. You know, keep on wishing and praying and hoping and speaking and putting that together for me. So yeah. So in that pool also, and I opened with fucking Guns Go Bang by Kid Cudi and Jay-Z from The Harder They Fall. Oh my God. If you have not seen that movie, that is not a holy shit, it's gonna change your complete life. It fucked with me so hard. That movie, I think that movie is fantastic. I love that movie. Finally sat down. Matter of fact, spoiler alert, I won't hardcore go into shit on this because I've kind of already done it, and I may actually end up pulling off doing a whole other review, but we did The Harder They Fall on Scene in 15. Great movie. Fantastic movie. Made me proud to be brown, black, dark, whatever you want to call it. Gave me another complete love for Lakeith Stanfield. I love Lakeith Stanfield. The guy is amazing. If you wanted me to hope and pray and root against my baby Regina King, you were fucking wrong. It's not going to happen. This was a great movie for Regina to add to her arsenal. You know, I ain't even got to Delroy yet, or Idris, what's his name? RJ Young, Mr. I'm Lightning with the Blam Blams. Edie Gaethje, if I'm fucking up the pronunciation of that, hit me. I will tell everybody, I love that movie. That movie makes me so happy. It's just really good, solid cast, well done. Like I said, I can go on and on and on about it, but we already did it on Scene in 15, and we'll be dropping episodes of that soon, too. Yeah, what else can I go into? Oh, we pulled off the baby shower. Don't feel bad if you didn't get an invitation. It was a lot of getting actual addresses and then getting email addresses and then all this other kind of shit, and then people feeling compelled to have to buy crap and all that kind of stuff. And that wasn't what it was about. I mean, yeah, they showed up and showed the fuck out when it came to everything. But the baby shower went awesome. You know, there were a lot of people that showed us a lot of support, just a lot of fucking love, and it was really, really cool. So I know they're not all going to hear this, but some of you will. To the people that came out of town, that came to the baby shower, that showed up and did the virtual thing, it was really cool. My brothers got on, and we got to have some deep conversation, and my girl Ellie jumped up, and I got to talk to her, and that was really cool. And with the baby shower, the family got to meet some people that I kind of been holding in pocket, that I hold near and dear, and it kind of all rolled over, but they all ultimately showed up to support us and support Miss Thang with her little self whenever she's going to come out. But it was crazy, but we managed to do it. It went off without a hitch. It was smooth. We couldn't have pulled it off without the old lady's besties, and I don't know if they're okay with being shouted out by name on here, but you know who you are. Thank you guys for helping us put everything together. We couldn't have done it without you. It was amazing that everything was able to happen that way. Other than that, check in with all my people. If I've been a little bit slack off this week on my DMs or catching people up and checking in on you to see how you guys are doing, please don't hold it against me. I like to believe that the network we have has been strong enough to cover down for some of you, because, I mean, I know I'm not as narcissistic to believe that I'm the only person in the world that says hi and that he loves you guys and that he wants to check on you guys and make sure that you're okay. I know I'm not the only cat that does that. But I love hitting my DMs and making sure that the people I've grown to know and the people I've grown to care about are doing all right. I get a lot of messages and emails and shit like that, you know, from people that may not be having the best days, the best moments and everything else. So if I've pulled back on that a little bit here, I apologize. So if you listen to this and you're one of my people, and I think, you know, most of my people probably do. Fuck, who else will listen to this? But I love each and every one of y'all, man. And don't think that I'm too busy to jump out to tie into y'all. I'm doing good. I hope you guys are doing good. If you're not, fuck, always shoot me a DM, man. Even if it's to say that your fucking day sucks and you feel like bitching about it, I'll listen to you, bitch. I mean, hell, if you want to listen to me bitch back, I'm sure we could do this all day long. Or whatever else. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I do the show and why I do what I do, because I want the transparency, the cracks and everything else to show, because I believe that being up here and trying to do this and showing people the real behind the scenes to everything that fucking goes on. You read my tweets and my all that shit and, oh, this guy's fucking weird and he's crazy and he's talking about boobs all the time. There's like a whole complete other side to me that drives that, and a reason why that happens, and one part of me that's very serious. I'm a former fucking veteran, man. I have lost friends to fucking suicide. I've lost friends to car accidents. I've lost friends to just random just bouts of violence, and about 95% of them probably could have been avoided with mental checkups and check-ins. So that's a really big thing with me. Matter of fact, I didn't get to throw anything out there, but Veterans Day passed 8 days ago. Shout out to all my veterans, my guys, my girls, everything else. So we want to keep that mental health merry-go-round going. So like I said, if anybody needs to reach out or anything else, and if I need to make my rounds again, let me know that I'm slipping, man. Completely let me know that I'm slipping. But the people that have checked in on me, and after you hear this, I know I'm probably going to get the occasional, hey, what's up, and all that shit. I completely invite it, so thank you guys. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I don't believe there's anything else. I got to walk through with you. I've got to go get my fat ass in the shower, because we got to shoot out to do some things today. It's going to be a busy ass day, but like I said, another episode of Jabology in the books with the new change. No longer Jabology 101, it's Jabology. Still trying to make this the flagship of Proper Rumpus Media, Proper Rumpus Media Network, Proper Rumpus Media Studios, still building and getting it done. Merch and everything else is just around the corner. Look for Scene in 15. I want to say Scene in 15 will be a reality next week. I don't see any reason why next week won't be a Jab on the Teeb on Wednesday, a Scene in 15 on Thursday, and a Jabology on Friday. So we're hoping and praying we can put this together to make it happen. I'd love to say there's no reason that it won't happen, but we might have a fucking baby born between now and then. So, you know, don't completely hold me to it, but we have made provisions that should not be a problem. But anyways, thank you guys again for listening to me ramble on for another hour of your lives that you can't get back, whether you're driving or doing whatever else. You know why I do this. Shout out to my son. What's going on, Googs? If you are listening to this, thank you, man, for listening to the show, for supporting the shit out of me. It's weird. You've actually got to listen to me run my mouth for years, and the fact that you still fucking want to do it right now is pretty impressive to me. But anyways, man, you guys be good. Take care of yourselves and be peace and stick the fucking landing, man. It's another episode of Jabalji. Take care.